My name is Candace Watkins, and I'm a librarian. The librarians that I know are out and about in the community with a finger on the pulse of technology trends, literacy, critical thinking, and access.
Last week, we talked about school libraries and the often overlooked role of the school librarian. Local teens and a teacher brought home the need for school librarians in our schools. This week, let's listen to the voices of other community members talk about libraries. We have some diverse perspectives, and we'll start with a lustful call to all teens.
In middle school, we youngsters piled into parents' minivans and rode to meet our crushes and flirt and hold hands at the mall. What were we thinking? We should have been at the library. Kids, I'm going to let you in on some information that may enhance your romantic lives until long after you are gray or bald or fat. All of the visual glitz of the mall exists in the library. Find the art books and paw through the Picasso and eat the colors like so many artery-clogging slices of Sparrow pizza. People, this is an easy way to see naked bodies. Sultry and beckoning, realistic and impressionistic and abstract, whatever you're into. You might find out for the first time what you are into. What's sexier than the smell of department store cologne, plastic tchotchkes, and Cinnabon lard? Musty books, babe. Yeah, it's a pity we lost the sensory delights of mining card catalogs, each drawer a treasure chest. But you can get a similar fix, flipping swiftly through any odd tome, from Auto Mechanics for Dummies to Selected Proust. Inhale and travel in time, thinking of the hands that covered the typewriter or gripped the quill pen in the early making of the book you are sniffing. Think of how an idea bleeds onto a page as ink and how that idea can be reabsorbed into the mind of a reader, back into the nerves and synapses, back into a pulse. Hot. Erotic. Malls, they have security guards and cameras and all manner of suspicious people ready to accuse simply because they are bored. Librarians don't give a flip. They are never bored. You and your sweetie can explore and find nooks all over the library in which to hold hands. Librarians, you know where their noses are stuck. It's true. They're oblivious, or at least they'll feign oblivion to help your cause. They're on your side. A library provides the deep belly thrill of the never-ending scavenger hunt. Unlike the deadening experience of sitting with friends, tapping curiosities into smartphones, answers obvious or too slow to load, the quest for information in a library quickens the breath and blood flow. Take your sweetie's hand or venture alone, letting the toasty dry air tousle and muss you as you fly from stack to stack, searching. Kids, I'm keeping it clean here. But you should know that there are libraries with giant, movable robot shelves. There are libraries with study rooms, vacant but for a whiteboard on which to draw dirty pictures. There are libraries with tiny study cages filled with the foulest and friendliest of words. Go to the library for the silence. Some sexy only emerges out of this atmosphere, with sound muffled, enhancing our other senses and our imaginations, vaster than the whole friggin' internet. That is a fact I looked up in a book. I cross-checked it. I annotated the margins. Go to the library and don't tell your parents I told you.
That is Allison Rook. Allison lives in Astoria and is a teacher and writer. You can tell by listening to her writing that she vividly creates a story with words, and her message is obvious. Ideas and words are seductive. And what better place for teens to uncover true, unadulterated lust than a library? I appreciate her creative approach and her obvious passion for what a library offers, especially to youth. It's interesting to note that public libraries often devote a significant amount of expenditures towards young adult literature and services, and they should. A 2013 Pew Research report on younger Americans' library habits and expectations finds that while young adults, ages 16 to 29, are heavy technology users, they also still highly value the print medium and physical space of a library. 75% of younger Americans say they have read at least one book in print in the past year, compared to 64% of adults ages 30 and older. It goes on to say that young adults feel that it is very important for libraries to have librarians as well as books for borrowing. And relatively few think that libraries should automate most library services, move most services online, or move print books out of public areas. And is it really so far-fetched to think that youth are choosing to hang out in libraries for fun? Allison is right on in suggesting that the library can be a hot spot for this age group. That same Pew report states that younger library patrons are also significantly more likely than those ages 30 and older to use the library as a study or hangout space. 60% of younger patrons say they go to the library to study, sit and read, or watch and listen to media, significantly more than the 45% of older patrons who do this. If the youth are our future, which undoubtedly they are, then public libraries are moving in the right direction and should continue to add staffing and resources to capture this age group. Young adults need and obviously want strong libraries and librarians. I had a chance to talk with Drew Herzig, Astoria City Councilor. Drew wonderfully articulates his perspective on libraries as a place that can open the doors of the mind, body, and the heart, not just for evolving individuals, but for entire communities. Drew describes his own journey and how libraries have played an important role in his metamorphosis.
Yeah, well, I'm Drew Herzig. I'm 61 years old, living in Astoria, Oregon, and I identify as a gay man. And I was coming to terms with myself back in the 60s. This was pre-Stonewall, and it's hard for people to imagine what it was like back then. And libraries were part of getting me through that. We'll go into that more, I guess.
I'm going to ask you, I mean, do you have like a specific memory of somebody? Like, is it sort of the stereotypical, the bun and...
Actually, it was. There was a couple of older librarians, Mrs. Whittlesey and Mrs. Siemens. They were two librarians at the Fair Oaks Library, and they were both really sweet ladies, and they were so friendly, and I could, seeing them outside the library was always a shock, because to me they were just the library. They were the face of reading kind of thing, and I can still remember their name and how pleasant they were, and just friendly, and made you feel special when they talked to you. Never talked down to you, just like talking as an equal. We would talk about books I had read and what I thought of them, and they had also read some of the children's books, and so we could, you know, talk briefly about that, and it was a real special time.
Well, let's talk a little bit about you growing up and experiencing your journey as a gay man, and how did libraries, or did they play a role in you becoming comfortable with that in your life?
Absolutely. This was, again, before Stonewall in the mid-60s. This was before gay was used collectively. We didn't exist. There was just no visibility. There were no role models. There were just nothing to look at. So as I was trying to understand my sexuality, and I wasn't even using that term, it's just like, who am I and why do I have these feelings? And you struggle with that, and you look for help in the ways that you've found other things, which to me was in reading. And I think a lot of lesbian and gay people in that time, they found classical Greece. That was the one locus in history where same-sex attraction was normal. It was so, however you found it, you realized it. You'd heard about Platonic relationships and Socrates and that sort of thing, and so you just tried to find more information about that. So you start that, but it's a little bit intimidating. So for me, the classical historical writings of Mary Renault were really important, because she was a historical fiction writer, and she wrote mainly in classical Greece, The Last of the Wine, and she wrote a set of books about Alexander of Macedon kind of thing. So finding those, it made the Greek experience come alive, much more accessible than, say, reading Plato. So you could relate to individuals and see how they lived. So then again, finding a place in history where same-sex attraction was considered normal, but even more important, could be part of an ethical life. It wasn't something that had to be broken off and set aside or hidden or just cut off from the rest of your life. It was integrated into these lives. And to see that as a model where my sexuality not only did not have to make me different from the rest of the human race, but could be part of an ethical approach to living. And again, these are words I didn't have at that time, but I was taking in that sensation of that this was not a disease, this was not something that was a disability or crippling, this was actually something that could be part of my whole life. I'm still working on that, mm-hmm. but getting that at that age, and again, not in those terms, but starting to take that in, helped me survive.
I think that's interesting because, you know, the library itself opened itself to you as a space and a place that was welcoming to all members of the community and allowed you to get in there and then delve into this historic community. And sort of it made this this connection for you, almost like a conduit.
Yes.
To yourself.
Yes, yeah. Which I think is what literature does, or art in general anyhow, if we look at the big picture. Art introduces us back to ourselves. It brings us back to ourselves in a fuller way to realize that we are much bigger and much deeper than our daily lives convince us that we are. And I think that hopefully is the function of any art. For me, reading is my art addiction kind of thing. And then when I brought my personal needs to it, it answered me. Even when you're reading alone in a library, you are in a community. In a way that you were, I mean, I know the internet is a community as well, but a library is when it's a bricks and mortar, it's a physical space that you are there with other people engaging in a common pursuit. And I think whatever you're reading, that still shapes the experience. Mm-hmm. And particularly because even today, LGBT youth, we still have a terrible suicide rate. There's still terrible feelings of isolation and being cut off from the rest of the world. To be in a library and to be reading some LGBT material is a very strong thing. It's like it means that you can be here in this common public space and be pursuing your own identity. And that I'm hoping people still do that because I know librarians are fighting to make that happen. And a library, to use an image, is really, it's sort of like the brains and the heart of a community. I mean, all the learning that is stored there and then all the passion that has been written, that is deposited there. It's like that's like where we should come to have our brains and our hearts activated. And it's, you know, if we can have community meetings there, it's perfect. That's just the right place for it. I think to me one of the most important things is to fight cultural and historical amnesia. We are so used to just turning the page now and always living in the present, and we forget, as Santayana said, those who fail to remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And we're doing that because we fail to remember the past, and libraries are where we should be able to come and connect with our past. It's so important, and I know everybody's like onward and future, and then that's fine, but if you don't assess your past, if you don't remember it, you're crippled. You are only, you know, half there, because we all have a past, and as a culture we have a past, and as a species we have a past, and that has to shape our decisions about the future. Otherwise we are just like Wile E. Coyote running out over empty space because we are not building on past knowledge and experience. So mm-hmm. I think libraries are going to become like the Library of Alexandria. Hopefully it's like that's where our past is stored and where we regularly go to check in with it. Connections, I mean, that's really what it's all about, whether we're connecting the present with the past, or people with books, or people mm-hmm. with people, or the library with the community. It's connection is where it happens. Mm-hmm. And I agree. And so much of it, sadly, is funding, you know, and that this country doesn't believe in the value of libraries in a way that other countries do. And it's tragic, and we have to fight that as best we can, because really, I think we've agreed that libraries, and now I'll add the soul, it's like we've got the heart and the mind and the soul of a community can be found in the library if they are fully funded, fully staffed, and fully validated by our use kind of thing. It's really, really mm-hmm. important. Yeah. And in getting people to really commit to make this happen, because I think if, and I hate to say the cliche, but I think if the will is there, we can find the funding. Thank you.
As a city councilor, Drew sees the essential role that libraries play in a community as a whole. It's important to have people in positions of power that understand this value. I think, though, what I like best about his comments is how he describes the intellectual interaction within a library. A sole individual may be in a relatively quiet part of a library, but that doesn't mean that there's no interaction. That person is on an intellectual journey, interacting with words, with history, with culture, and all of that is shaping the mind. How he or she evolves as a person and interacts with and understands the world. That's a powerful, interactive community of the mind and soul. One that may appear quiet on the outside, but is raucous within. A conduit. That's a great way to think about libraries. A conduit to our collective past. A conduit to your future self. Or maybe even a more tangible conduit. One to help cope with the realities of daily life. A conduit to jobs. A conduit to the local area. A conduit to a safe place.
I ain't got no home, I'm just a roaming round. Just a wandering worker, I go from town to town. And the police make it hard wherever I may go. And I ain't got no home in this world anymore.
When was the last time you were without a roof over your head? Without a guaranteed meal during the day? Most of us have access to this on a relatively consistent basis. Access to the basics that make modern life comfortable. And perhaps many of us have forgotten, or maybe even never experienced, what it's like to have nothing. No money to get us through the day, no shelter in a cold, blustery downpour, no prospects, or even worse, no hope. That's increasingly the case, though, for many Americans. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development states to Congress, in its most recent report on homelessness, that on a single night in January of 2013, there were 610,042 people experiencing homelessness in the United States. And I think that's most likely a conservative number. The term homeless encompasses a wide variety of people and situations, but the bottom line is that many adults and children are living without the consistent reassurance of the basic necessities of life, including a permanent place to live. To drive this home even further, the Daily Historian reported recently that there are 240 K-12 students in Clatsop County that are identified as homeless. Wow! So where do libraries fit into this picture? Well, libraries are often havens for the homeless. Libraries partner with social service organizations in the community, and librarians create programming and resources for homeless adults and youth in transition. Most of all, libraries provide a stable environment for people to explore interests, find helpful community resources, and perhaps find valuable assistance. David Mooney speaks to this. I met Dave in our library at Clatsop Community College during the summer of 2013. He was on the road, a term that many homeless use. He aptly describes the role that libraries have played in his travels and how, overall, his recent experiences with libraries as a homeless person have transformed him.
Well, my name is David Mooney, and I was born in Peoria, Illinois, and that's where all my family lives still. But last I was living was in St. Louis, Missouri, which is where actually all my family comes from. I've taken trips like the one I'm on now, but they've all been maybe two week longs at the most, and it'll have been 3 months by the time I probably get home. So this is kind of the culmination of all those trips and all the other kind of imaginings and things that I've always wanted to do, all put into one. And originally I came out here and it was very open-ended because it was almost as if I was interviewing all the places I was passing through for my future life. Because I'm pretty sure that the Peoria area and maybe Illinois, and maybe even Midwest in itself, is not quite where I want to be right now. So as I was passing through places, I was thinking, maybe I'll just live here. You know, I don't have a job or a wife or a girlfriend or prospects back home, so why not? And then, you know, I remembered my niece's birthday party is August 20th in, back home in Peoria, and she's turning 10 years old. And I love her very much, so I'm going to try to make that. That's my deadline.
Have you visited many libraries along the way?
At the beginning, no, I didn't go. I don't know why. But then, starting in Napa area, Napa, California, I went to my first library there on the trip. And since then, all through the rest of California and Southern Oregon, and then Portland was a huge, great place for us as far as libraries are concerned. And then west of Portland, and then here as well.
And so what do you use libraries for along the way?
Just about everything, honestly. From the most lofty and intellectual measures all the way to the very base, such as there's a bathroom here, you know? And I know that's not what the library's for, but there's a drinking fountain and there's a bathroom, and it's not outside. And but for the main things is we found all kinds of work through libraries, through the computers. We've also, I mean, we get excited when we're working. We get excited when it comes near 3 o'clock because that means we go to libraries. And I almost feel like a kid again because we don't, while we do have a couple books, we don't have the room or the the money to keep a big library with us.
And what are you reading right now?
Always by my side is Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass. Because it's, I think, the best work of poetry there ever was, and also for traveling and doing things like this, there's nothing better. And then I always try to read the literature of the area that I'm in. So for here, I've been reading a lot of sea literature, river literature, just anything maritime-based, really. So, and I'm reading short stories by Jack London, because he's got a couple, because he's from the area and did a lot of stuff up there. And then I've picked out a couple compilations of Northwest writers, and also excerpts from diaries of the first people to come here, and even Woody Guthrie, you know, worked a lot on the Columbia River, and he wrote a lot of things about this area. So just trying to stay to the region, really. In Portland, when we would have days off, I'd spend from 10 a.m. all the way till 7 or 8 p.m., you know. And it's totally flipped my whole, really, perception of libraries and of using my time. So when I get back home, I think this is going to continue. Yeah, for me, libraries have been, you know, probably the most important thing. Wherever we go, whatever city we are, part of that city, we make sure we're near a place where if we wake up in the middle of the night, we can go to the bathroom. And two, where are the libraries? Because that connects us to everything else outside of that.
So in a way, it influences your impression of the city and the area
always,
that you're in.
Always, yeah. For instance, Hillsboro, a little west of Portland, has a very nice new library, really nice and new, which is great, but it's also just very new, whereas Portland's library, it's got a lot of history to it, and just the building itself, it reflects the city's architecture, it reflects the city's history, it reflects the city's people, and kind of how they operate themselves. So you get a sense of a community by just being in the library.
I'd like to leave all of you in library land with a poem. The poet is Robert Michael Pyle, known in the local area as Bob Pyle. Bob is an internationally known lepidopterist. That's right, kids. Let's say it together. Lepidopterist. That means he studies moths and butterflies. And not just casually, Bob has published 14 books and hundreds of papers, essays, stories, and poems over the years. His work has earned much acclaim, including the 1987 John Burroughs Medal for Distinguished Nature Writing, the 2007 National Outdoor Book Award, and twice the Washington State Book Award. His books include Where Bigfoot Walks, Crossing the Dark Divide, Wintergreen, Rambles in a Ravaged Land, Skytime in Gray's River, Living for Keeps in a Forgotten Place, and Mariposa Road, the first butterfly big year. Bob obviously has a love affair with nature and with words. This love also carries over to his community, where he has been an active member in the Grays River Grange for decades. In his book, Sky Time and Grays River, Living for Keeps in a Forgotten Place, he describes the Grange with its colorful community characters, its rituals, and how it serves as a central hub to the community. A place where all gather to celebrate the seasons and each other, and where differing viewpoints coexist. This tolerance and willingness to engage with different ideologies seems to clash with modern society. A recent article released by Jennifer Agiesta of the Associated Press underlines this increasing divide in American society. The article points out that a new survey from the Pew Research Center finds Americans are divided by ideology and partisanship, not only when they cast ballots, but also in choosing where to live, where to get their news, and with whom to associate. A peaceful coexistence is increasingly difficult. Well, a peaceful coexistence is rooted in knowledge and education. And obviously, that's my message to you. Libraries nourish, in Drew Herzig's words, the mind, the heart, and soul of a community. They allow us to explore our past, present, and future, to evolve as individuals, and to create an interconnected community. When we, as a community, nourish our libraries, we nourish ourselves. And with that, maybe one day, a peaceful coexistence will become a reality. Here's Bob's ode to libraries.
The Librarians. There is a golden walnut tree outside, and a spider dropping bit by bit on her way to work like a lineman cinching down a cable or a climber rappelling. There are people who do no harm from one day to the next. They spray no poisons, drop no bombs, pave no meadows. There are deep colors in this glass of ale, and pools of liquid light on its surface like ponds in Cumbria, or the second eyelids of a seabird. There are people who glow softly through the garish tumult. They make no waves, launch no rockets, claim no fame. Is this a genetic condition to withstand the no-tax morons, beat back the dunderheads, flail the Philistines with nothing more than the love of books and reading? Or is it a matter of life and death? The walnut will drop its leaves, and one of these nights the spider will freeze. Books, too, will die, they say. But don't believe it. Not until the last librarian is gone will I give up.
I'd like to thank all the community members that participated in this project. Your voices are the ones that matter, and you provided the color and meaning. I'd also like to thank Kathleen Morgane at KMUN. I'd be lost without everything that she added, from feedback to help with recording and editing. A special thanks to Allison Rook for pushing me to make those connections. To Donna Lanklos for her kind consultation, as well as her leading research in the Visitors and Residents Project. To Char Booth for knocking around some ideas that brought clarity to this undertaking. To Moria Golub for hooking me up. She knows exactly what I mean. To the library staff at Clatsop Community College, Mariah, Rhonda, Brenda, and Kate, who redefined the term stellar, and also put up with my shenanigans. To music artist Poddington Bear, Et, and Prolete R for contributing to the soundtrack and to Creative Commons. And finally, to the Oregon Library Association for being a supportive voice for all libraries in Oregon. Oh, and thanks to you for listening. See you at the library.